Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, they never go home, they never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
Every now and again, we're in the middle of an interview on the podcast when we've got a guest on to talk about one thing, but they end up saying something that sends the conversation in a totally different direction. It happened recently with Jack Conan, who came on to reflect on Ireland's Grand Slam victory, but ended up talking about a medical issue he was suffering that had drained him of much of his energy last season, affected him physically and psychologically. I'd have to say, it made me more invested in him than I would have ordinarily been, and
this has happened in the past, Joel. Oh, Jack Conan is now one of those guys for me. Every time
watching him marauding around the Land's End Road pitch on Saturday, scoring two tries and generally dominating the Toulouse back row, it looked as though he's back to his best, and it was great to see it. You are welcome to your Bank Holiday Monday podcast. Hey, Si.
Owen, how are you? Hey, Murph.
Kieran here.
Hello there, Simon. Were you on that tweet that someone sent to me on Saturday morning? It was a Twitter poll. Mm-hmm. And it was, who is going to win Man of the Match today? And there were three options, number six, number seven, or number eight.
I consider we had Darris van der Vleer and Conan in the background.
Yeah, I honestly felt like that would actually...
Conan cruelly overlooked it. I think it was Gibson Park got it in the end.
You want to be very, very good to beat a back rower, scores two tries and all the stats.
Well, let's be honest, Simon. Dunland didn't pick that. It was a carve up between the broadcasters. I'm going to go ahead and say that the dilettantes on BT Sport are handing out Man of the Match awards to scrum halves, people whose the number on their back are in double figures, that sort of thing.
I overthinking it.
To steal the stats that Jerry...
It was Rory Kelly who sent me that tweet as well, by the way.
To steal the stats that Jerry had on Conan's performance, two tries, first tries he scored for Leinster in over a year. He also carried 11 times for 65 metres and made 17 tackles, missing none.
How many did he miss, Owen, sorry?
That was none. Zero. A little reminder of what Conan had to say to us last month.
I was struggling with energy a lot post kind of Christmas of 21, and I played that Six Nations and I just knew something wasn't right, and it was like that for months, and I couldn't train as hard as I wanted, I couldn't perform at the level I wanted, and I ended up getting a series of tests on, and after about 4 or 5 months they kind of found a certain abnormality in some regard, and it's been rectified now. It took a few months even post that to kind of things energy level to come back to the point where I felt like I was myself again. For a long time there I didn't, so it's something I held with me for a long, long time, and I couldn't let go of it, because every game, every training session, all I was thinking about was, how am I going to feel, how tired am I going to be. I kind of did a bit of work with Gary Keegan in Irish camp, and I sat down and I sat down with him one day, and he was like, you need to let it go. Do you know what I mean? You need to forgive yourself for not being at the level you wanted to be at. That's in the past now. You need to release it. And it took me a while, but it did. And I feel like I'm better for it. And, the last 2 weeks is probably the best rugby I've played in a long, long time. And it was the not knowing that was killing me, because a bit in my head was like, do I just have long COVID here? COVID over the Christmas previously leading up to Six Nations 22.
Yeah.
I was like, do I just have long COVID here? Am I just struggling because of that? And I'm sure that probably didn't help, but you know, it turned out to be something else. And I got a lot of peace when I finally found out what it was. And that was the kind of the start of the journey about getting back to who I am and the player that I am.
It was funny. He seemed quite surprised himself that he was talking about that almost. Yeah. He sort of started getting into it, and I don't know if that was actually the plan, but he subsequently did
That's
more
great
media.
Journalism, on.
He did more media. He revealed it was, after he chatted to us, he revealed it was a cyst in his pituitary gland. He went in for a scan on a neck injury. That led to a brain scan, and that's where, thankfully, he was spotted and has since been dealt with. But he was pretty phenomenal at the weekend.
He was brilliant. And he was saying the Scotland game in the Six Nations was the first time he spent a full game feeling like himself. So it's quite recent.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say this game is probably his best performance this season. The fact that he even got picked means Leo Cullen's seen an awful lot in training as well. Like, picked ahead of Caelan Dorris, who we were saying a few weeks ago was probably the best number 8
Dorris
in the world.
Was number 6, we should say.
Sorry, yeah.
We all know number 8 is the most important position. let's be honest about it.
Yeah, put it that way. He's not on the bench, and he's in his preferred starting. Like, Dorris's preferred starting position is 8.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, Dorris was brilliant as well, but it does say something that he got that selection.
I think most back rowers who fancy themselves as being, you know, skillful ball player, good ball players,
the big dog,
want to play number 8, don't they?
Yeah.
Isn't it one of those things?
Yeah.
It's like you get stuck at fullback. I see myself more as a midfielder.
Well, in every team up to about under 15, the best player, just stick him at number 8 because he's the big lad who runs at you and can pass.
Gets on the ball a fair bit.
But he was interesting after. He was talking about...
every day is a school day. That's interesting.
Little window into my selection policy for... Yeah.
The Clontarf under 9s know what's coming next year.
He was talking after as well, like, he doesn't feel Leinster played very well over the last years in the big games in Europe, but that they're figuring out, themselves in Ireland are figuring out how to deal with big men. Miafu, I thought, was actually quite good for Toulouse, but another absolute giant, Arnold, wasn't so great. But our relatively small second rows, I thought I played the two of them ultimately. But then you see Will Skelton coming up looking so relaxed in the post-match interviews after the La Rochelle game, and he's another level again because he's the size plus the offloads plus the brains. Like, he's a really smart rugby player as well, and it's just a slightly unnerving thing of Leinster have dealt with everything except like Rog and Will Skelton.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dan Sheehan was asked after the match, but before the second semi-final, which team do you want to, it's always asked, and normally people are just dead bad at it. As he did initially, whoever, he said initially before saying, it would be nice to get La Rochelle again. That one hurt us last year. To get another swipe at them, especially here in the Aviva in front of a home crowd, would be something special. And it is going to be very different to playing in Marseille. It's going to be a different vibe entirely. It is. And we'll talk to Jerry, actually. We're going to hear from Jerry and Shane Horgan in a little while. And Jerry's got some good stats on how strong Leinster are at the Aviva Stadium. So I would have to think that's a pretty big factor. But La Rochelle have had their number the last couple of times they played, so it's a big one.
I still think, like, Toulouse win the top 14, La Rochelle still haven't won it. They won the double a couple of years ago. Toulouse, they've probably more talented players than either La Rochelle or Leinster, as in the extremely talented ones, obviously DuPont and Ntamack and those.
Yeah.
But then I sort of feel like La Rochelle are probably still the best coach side.
Okay.
Certainly if you were to go in the weekend's games and over the last couple of years, La Rochelle feel like the best coach side in Europe.
It's a good matchup, though. I think it's good that the two are playing again. You get a rematch. It's a proper rivalry ridiculous. Then. Building.
It's interesting that Sheehan would say that they shouldn't want La Rochelle. You know, Exeter would be a far easier game, but they want them, you know. And how many players have we spoken to this year? We spoke to Ryan Baird and a couple of others, Leinster and Ireland players, and just keep referring back to last year's final. Like, their whole source of energy and motivation this year is the last second loss to La Rochelle in the final.
Not completely. Well, anyway, that's come to pass. It's going to be on in the Aviva Stadium, 20th of May, in case that sounded like 28th. 20th, Saturday 20th of May.
Little,
quarter to 5 kickoff. Big day of sport in Dublin. Katie Taylor's homecoming fight in the Tree Arena is on that night. In case you're wondering why you can't flag down an El Free Now taxi on that Saturday, that could be the reason. There's a lot of sports fans in town. Shane Horgan and Jerry Thorney on today to chat about Leinster's win and Ireland's 5th defeat in 5 in what has been a nightmare women's Six Nations campaign. This is your one Bank Holiday Monday pod. You're going to have to be a World Service member to hear Ken's football show tomorrow. He's got some things to say about Liverpool, Spurs, Jurgen Klopp, let it flow by the looks of his Irish Times article. There's also a massive match tonight with Everton away to Leicester. If they lose that one, I'm going to say, are Everton down if they lose that? Mathematically, no. But their next two games after this are Brighton and then Man City. Brighton away, Man City at home. So their final two games, I should say, are absolutely perfect end of season fodder. Wolves and Bournemouth.
Oh, amazing.
You don't just want to be playing mid-table teams. You want to be playing teams who've been in a relegation fight most of the season but are now safe.
Yeah, you don't want lads who've been on the beach for 3 months. You want lads who've just landed on the beach.
They're currently exhaling.
Because you get bored of being on the beach and then you start winning, you start getting motivated again.
I'd actually like some physical exertion now. I'd actually like to do something, you know, so... Yeah,
the problem for Everton is they have to get that far, and it's just that they need a win tonight, or at least, well, they pretty much need a win. Anyway, we're going to be talking to Ken about that tomorrow. You'll have to be a member, secondcaptains.com, £5 a month plus VAT to sign up. Wednesday's pod will be Paul Flynn and Michael Murphy on the Football Championship. The big result of the weekend came in the hurling. Murph, Limerick taken down, and deservedly so, by Clare.
A night of magnificent frenzy, Malachy Clerken called it in the Irish Times on Saturday night on the website. And I mean, it was. These guys should actually play each other. I know it's a cliche. It's like, they'd get tired eventually of playing each other 10 times a season. But honestly, I don't think Limerick and Clare would. They've just given us three unbelievable games in the last 12 months. And this one went, all the way down to the wire. There were probably 15 moments where you're like, well, that's that now, that's that decided. That's the winning of the game. And it just rolled on and on and on in just a beautiful, beautiful tapestry of sport.
So what was it? What is it about Clare that gets under, or in this case anyway, got under Limerick's skin?
I mean, I'm just going to come right out and say it. Clare, do not fear Limerick. They're literally the Meath of this Limerick hurling team.
Hang on, they hadn't beaten Limerick in the Gaelic ground since 1889 or something. So it was a stat, right?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, the original stat was that they'd never beaten Limerick. I think that maybe someone might have found one in the late 1800s or something.
Specifically at the Gaelic grounds, they would have played them a lot in Thurles and various places.
Yeah. But no, I mean, Clare, it was a last chance saloon for Clare. Cork did it last year. They lost the first two games of the Munster Championship and then managed to squeak in third place. But if you lose your first two games in a five-team group with only four games, I mean, you're massively putting yourself behind the eight ball. But also, Clare have a ton of really good forwards, and it's nearly kind of overlooked. I think this maybe happens, you know, when there is a guy as good as Tony Kelly has been for the last 4 or 5 years, that the narrative just shrinks down to them. And more often than not, that has been the case. But at various times in the last 3 or 4 years, he's been without Mark Rogers. Ryan Taylor's had injuries. Aaron Shanahan's had a ton of injuries. Aidan McCarthy missed all of last year. So that narrative about Clare only having, you know, one real scoring threat. Shane O'Donnell obviously has had injury troubles over the last 18 months as well, 2 years. So these narratives kind of build up, even if you know that these players will be coming back on stream and that at some unspecified date in the future, Clare will actually have a very good forward line. They have that now. Yeah. The vast majority of those guys are actually fit now. And they can really play, you know. Now, I was actually writing last week about how for the vast majority, so there have been three round robin seasons. So six teams have failed to qualify from the Munster Championship, and four of those teams went winless in the season where they ended up not finishing outside the top three. So for the and the other two times you could make any sort of an argument where a team played well and just were unlucky to lose out in the Munster round robin. So this kind of narrative has, I hate using that word, I've used it again, but you know, there's an idea out there that, you know, great teams always miss out in the Munster round robin. It actually has never happened. A team that's played well has never missed out in the Munster round robin. I feel like Waterford are already doomed. Yeah. They were so poor yesterday. So, just so lifeless.
Hammered by Cork, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, a big crowd of Waterford people in Porkycueve. No excuse whatsoever. After a pretty positive display against Limerick last week. Waterford are now gone. Mm-hmm. But this could be the year that just, you know, by the vagaries of the Munster Championship, a team that's actually played quite well, won at least two games, will just lose out on scoring difference. And, I, you know, Cork put a big score on Waterford. Limerick didn't do that. I mean, are Limerick now in danger? I mean, I think that's still... it's still premature to be talking like that. No, but when you look at how bad Waterford were yesterday and how close they came, and then Limerick lose on Saturday, all Saturday did was give teams all over the place hope that maybe Limerick aren't entirely unbeatable. Limerick will still be in the Munster final. They'll still be in an Ireland semi-final, I think. But it's not looking half as cut and dried it did 3 weeks
ago. It might also do what this sometimes does to great teams and give them... actually a heads up early in the year that there are issues that need to be fixed, and they might get them fixed if you were to look at it negatively.
Exactly. But the one thing, I suppose, is that they lost Sean Finn and Keane Lynch to injury, and none of them look like the sort of thing that they'll be able to run off in a week or 2 weeks. So they are two absolute mainstays of the team. So throw all that into the mix. Throw the fact that Garrod Hegarty didn't start. Possibly internal discipline thing, given the fact that he got sent off, and maybe it's a way for John Colley to say, listen, you can't keep getting sent off. You can't keep giving referees the chance to ref you in a way that even if we think it's unfair, you have to take it out of their hands. So, you know, there are things floating around there. I mean... they're still going to be right back in it, but it did. You know, even Galway Kilkenny had, I thought, for all the people were saying, it was kind of a sleepy enough old game. I did actually feel like there was an extra edge to it, given that Limerick slipping gives everyone hope.
People were giving out about it not being on television.
It
was a GAA Go match. I saw, for example, Tony Lean, Irish Examiner sports editor, sent a big miss for the nation's TV watchers. Roy Curtis, two-time sports writer of the year. Mm-hmm. An extraordinary and magnificent contest. Limerick taken down by Clare in an elemental, visceral, stunning battle. By some distance, the most compelling contest in Irish sport this weekend. Incredible game. And no national TV coverage. Shameful.
I mean, shameful. Yeah. I mean, it's the deal. Like, the deal was signed 9 months ago. This was going to happen, you know? I would just accept this at the time. You know, if you're writing at the time, fair enough. But I mean...
and in fairness, I haven't had a chance to go back and look at either journalists' writings at the time here, so maybe they may well have been writing.
Yeah, and I mean, £60 to get it before Christmas, £60 on top of your BT subscription, £60 on top of your Sky Sports subscription.
It'd be a good gift, say, for a son to give a mother.
Well, I tell you, it was €79 at the weekend. I know that because I subscribed to Watch the Dubs, Murph.
Yeah, God. You're just like...
well, this is literally exactly what everyone... this is what this model is built on. It's people want to watch their county. And okay, so you are going to miss the odd... there is going to be the odd big game that people will say it's a shame it wasn't on national television. These sort of services, and it was Sky Sports and now it's GAA Go, are also showing you a lot of games that might not otherwise be shown. I don't know what that Dubs game had been anywhere.
Certainly there was new ground broken yesterday when at 4:30 there were three live GAA games on three different services simultaneously. So Armagh Down was on BBC Northern Ireland, Dublin and Kildare threw in half an hour late, obviously, because Louth Offaly went to extra time. And then there was Cork Waterford on RT television as well. So the money you pay gets you more choice. Absolutely. The fact of the matter is, this is settled law that the GAA are going to sell their rights and you're going to have to pay a subscription of some kind or another to see these GAA games. So, I mean, I have a limited enough amount of sympathy for people making the point that for some reason Clare Limerick should be on national television. I mean, I don't know what that means. You know, like, if it was a terrible game, would it not matter if it wasn't on national if Limerick had won it by 15 points? I mean, I don't get the argument. I mean, absolutely get the argument that at least when Sky were paying the GAA for the media rights, that was money coming from Sky into the GAA. Now what we have is GAA Go, which is co-run by RTÉ and the GAA itself. So the GAA is paying itself to show games, in part at least. Mm. It's also paying itself to bring up what was just sort of a belt and braces operation, which GAA Go was, up to broadcast quality. I sat down to watch Limerick and Clare. Seamus Hickey and Tommy Walsh were outside the ground. You got a flavour for what it was actually like to be at a championship game. A couple of minutes later, they're on the pitch. Seamus Hickey is there analysing the Clare warm-up on the field itself. it was a really good production. Yeah, like, I really David Burke was dressed like Tony Montana. It was amazing.
Keane Ward and Paddy Andrews were doing the analysis at Croker for the Dublin game, and they're both very good.
I think
people might have the image that this is just a streaming, a match streaming service, which is the case in other sports, but they've obviously added bells and whistles.
Absolutely. That's the reality of the situation. I mean, a year ago, we had a British company paying us money to us being the GA, paying the GA money to show games. Now, the GA is paying the GA to show games. So, I mean, it was always a ridiculous thing. So, I mean, this idea that you're giving out about Clare and Limerick being not on the national broadcaster,
isn't that ridiculous? I mean, it's not everyone wants to get Sky, and a lot of people want to cut the cord, and a lot of people are going through subscription services, and you end up getting a situation where you can pay, if you're a hardcore GA fan, that's the main thing you want to see, you get to see loads of games for, I didn't even realise it was cheaper than the 79, but €60 or whatever.
€60 for a year, season pass.
Which sounds like pretty
before,
good value.
Before the end of December of last year.
Like, what I'm saying is, I understand it's still money out of your pocket, but it's not like the GA are saying you can't watch these games. It was televised. It depends what you call TV. It was broadcast. Mm. It was just broadcast on a streaming service as opposed to terrestrial TV.
I don't have a problem with that. I don't know, even do the lads previously quoted, is that what they have a problem with? The fact that it's on a laptop that you can just connect to your... Like, my mom and dad can figure out how to use a HDMI cable, so I think that includes... I'm willing to say that basically anyone can do it if my mom and dad can do it. So, I mean, I don't think that's the problem necessarily. It's the money, you know? And I mean, sure, it's a good deal. 60 quid is a good deal. 80 quid is a good deal. I mean... you're going to watch it for 2 or 3 months. Mm. You know, if you were getting Sky only for the GA, you'd be paying about the same. You know, if it was just the GA that you were interested in. Of course, the fact of the matter is, like, when Sky bought rights for GA games, I mean, it didn't knock a bother out of me because I was paying my money for Sky. I was watching golf, I was watching Formula One, or I was watching the Premier League. You know, that's, you get all that plus the GA games. Whereas with GA Go, all you get is the GA. Like, it's not a thing that you log into throughout the week and there's like new programming up. It's literally here are the games and that's it. I mean, I actually have really enjoyed the GA Go production. I enjoyed the fact that I can sit down on a Tuesday morning and watch a game back in full with commentary. I mean, I enjoy that. I mean, I like the fact that it's just all there ready for you to flick through or watch back if you're doing analysis pieces on the podcast. Like, all of it I've really enjoyed. There were problems last week apparently with the app and with the iPad app. I didn't hear much of that talk this week. So it's only natural that there are going to be teething problems, and hopefully, you know, I was concerned about the rural broadband in Milltown. No problems there. So, I mean, this is the reality. You know, like once the decision was made that subscription channels were going to be allowed to show the GA, this is what happens. Great games happen on channels that aren't RTE or TG Car or Virgin Media. So, like, I don't get that part of it. I just don't get that.
Email editor at secondcaptains.com if you've got anything you want to say about that or indeed any other matter.
And he is my second captain.
Second captain. That's a humorous comedy show.
I saw that. Important men for my selection.
What is it all about?
There's no tennis as bold as a pig.
David Clifford!
I love me county.
It's a dump.
We're going to do it.
Thanks very much to Shane Horgan and Jerry Thorney for joining us on this bank holiday. How are you, Jerry?
Good.
Good stuff. Shane, how's the form?
Very good. Very good. Good weekend of European Cup rugby.
Well, yeah, Leo Cullen was giving out about the hype around the Leinster team last week, Jerry, saying it motivates their opponents, but they didn't do much to dampen it down by their own performance.
Yeah, he was in a strange mood last week, Leo.
Yeah.
I wonder, was the stream of consciousness on the Monday and again on the Friday, but particularly the Monday, anything to do with Robbie Henshaw's quad strain on the Monday, maybe, that we all didn't know about, but he must have known about. But either way, he didn't like Yeah, there was a bit of tension between themselves and the EPCO over the way the tickets were sold. There wasn't a capacity crowd, which, you know, as the club game of the season in Ireland, probably certainly up until now.
He's been talking with the fans the whole time over the last few weeks, and even afterwards he's
and
trying to explain, the players, there are a lot of games at home and a lot of big games, but obviously asking supporters
more
to come week after week.
Yeah, and at a time when difficult. Season ticket holders are renewing their season tickets as well. I think that was their fifth home game of the season already, which equals the record in one season, and potentially now another 1, 2, 3, 4 to go. So this comes after a Grand Slam coronation against England and a home game against France. So there's a element maybe of Aviva fatigue.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There, this is just so much to choose from. And I think that particularly, you know, these times are tough financially for people to shelling out tickets prices. Like, they were very expensive tickets. The cheapest going around the last few days anyway, like €75.
Yeah. Very few family packages, and
very
cheap
few.
Ones went quick. Yeah.
Listen, the financial imperative is, you know, is an issue certainly, but I do say it's quite a nice position to be in, that we're complaining that we have to go to Grand Slam decider games and have to go to European Cup semi-finals and finals. So, without underestimating
too much winning, Shane.
Without underestimating the financial imperative, it does bode well and for Irish rugby, and I prefer it than the alternative, I have to say.
Well, also, they're saving their fans a lot of cost in terms of travel by having all their games at home. And it means an awful lot to them getting home games, because the Aviva has become a fortress. Like, that is the 24th win in a row with crowds.
Yeah.
24th win in a row. The only defeat in the knockout stage they've ever had was behind closed doors in that quarterfinal against Saracens.
You'd have to think that might make a difference in the final, could well make a difference in the final.
It goes all the way back to 2015, so it's fairly impressive.
Really?
Yeah,
Jeepers.
Against Toulon.
That's amazing, Shane. And never really looked in doubt at the weekend. How impressed were you by Leinster's performance?
I was impressed, but in a kind of different way, and I'm sure we'll come on to it later on, but I thought La Rochelle were the most impressive team at the weekend. Leinster were impressive in a very Leinster type of way. They were very efficient. Didn't see a huge amount of offloading, but we saw quite a lot of line breaks, everybody knowing their job. I looked at the sort of back line beforehand, and it was purely based on, in retrospect, it was purely based off Henshaw not playing. I was like, oh, are we all of a sudden a little bit light there? And we weren't. Key players stood up, performed very well, and most of all, around the yellow cards, the change in sort of Leinster's mentality to switch, to recognise this is our opportunity and drive it in to an even higher gear, and make massive inroads during those periods. That was very impressive. It just seemed like a very Leinster-type performance.
Yeah, I think Shane makes a good point there. It's not so much the yellow cards, which happen in every game. It was Leinster's mental switch to the Toulouse yellow cards.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't necessarily follow that every time a team gets a yellow card, they concede 14 points.
No.
It has to be a very ruthless team with the 15 players on the pitch to maximise that numerical advantage. And I was a bit disingenuous, I thought, of the French media, Nugo Mola, to point out afterwards that with 15 against 15, they outscored Leinster by 22 points to 13 or whatever it was, whereas it was 28-0 in the two periods that Toulouse were down to 14 men. Remember, too, that in the quarterfinal against Leicester, when the match was still very much in the balance, Caelan Doris got a yellow card, and that would produce Leinster's best 10 minutes of that whole performance that day, and I think they won it 7 or 10-0 that 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, like, their ability to go up a gear within a game, as Shane highlighted there, is it's huge in knockout football. It's just huge.
And Jerry, a couple of things there. One, you can't say yellow cards are, they're part of the game, and how you manage them on both sides is vitally important. And, even more now, because we know there's more yellow cards and more red cards than there's ever been in rugby. So it's part of how you manage. And I think we saw, in a couple of ways, tactically, to lose were really, really disappointing. And the first one was around those yellow cards. That first yellow card, I counted at least four unforced errors from them during that period that Leinster capitalised. So Leinster went up a gear, but Toulouse went down a gear. And anytime you get a yellow card against you, you should have a strategy to manage that period as effectively as possible. Toulouse managed both yellow cards really badly. I'm not taking away from Leinster. They definitely upped their game, but they were really given opportunity by sort of inept Toulouse play during that time, a naive play. And then the other one was around the split on the bench as well. Like, tactically, that was, you know, crazy. I know where it came from, and I think they were looking to overpower Leinster in the pack. But where you've got a circumstance where you have one player, you got a centre gets injured, and it means that your two best players, and definitely two of the best players in the world, have to leave their positions and change. That's not a good strategy under any circumstances.
Just too clever for their own good there, weren't they? I mean, it's great having versatile players, but you don't do that to Antoine Dupont. And Romain Entemac moving from 10 to 13 just becomes peripheral.
Yeah, it's too heavy of a roll of the dice.
Yeah.
You know, it's their thing. These guys are indestructible and you know, we won't have to do it. It won't, you know, that eventuality won't occur. Well, you know, it wasn't beyond the realms of possibility that it did occur. And it was so catastrophic in changing the way that they play or their potential for them to reach their maximum. That should have been enough to put it off. And listen, did that cost them the game?
No.
Maybe it did. Maybe it did. I don't know. Maybe it did. But it certainly didn't allow them to play at their maximum. And it shouldn't be one injury to your halfback means you have to take two of your best players and two of the world's best players and put them in positions that they can play because they are two of the world's best players, but where they're not going to operate at their maximum for themselves or for the team.
Jerry, what did you make of the Netty headbutt on Van der Fleer? It was a strange, very strange incident in that obviously Van der Fleer went at him once. Netty kind of used his head. That didn't look too illegal, but maybe a penalty. Nobody saw it, obviously. And then Van der Fleer went again. Van der Fleer went at him high, but Netty seemed to raise his head then to meet Van der Fleer, essentially a headbutt of sorts. And that was another yellow card. What did you make of it? It was a strange-looking
situation.
Very strange.
Watched again and again. In one sense, you can understand why Netty, he sees Van der Fleer coming.
Yeah.
And what do you do but kind of maybe brace yourself for protect yourself?
You're kind of trapped in a mall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he lined him up. He clearly sees him coming and leads with his head, not his shoulders.
Yeah.
And I was, at the time, I was convinced it was just a straight red because it was head-on-head contact, as Wayne Barnes said, and he said, you go to the TMO to check if there was a deliberate act of foul play. And he came and said, it was not a clear, deliberate act. Well, if the player looks at him, sees him coming and then leads with his head, I don't know what is.
He also said if there's doubt, you could hear this on the system as well. If there's doubt between a red and a yellow, it's yellow. So there seems to be some clarification where they're trying not to give, in inverted commas, soft red cards.
Yeah. So it's ironic because we've been here before with the Uni Antonio one and the Ireland-France game, also Wayne Barnes, which was upgraded effectively to a red afterwards by a disciplinary panel subsequently, which meant that Wayne Barnes got a little bit of a reprimand. It'd be interesting to see if the same thing happens here. I thought it should have been red. And again, we have this kind of mixed feelings about it, which is probably not politically correct and given the issues around concussion and head injuries for players, but that you felt on one level, yes, he should have got red, a bit like the Antonio one, but had it been red, it would have somehow devalued Leinster's wins as it would have devalued Ireland's wins. And I was quite happy to see Antonio got punished subsequently, but that France couldn't go home with the excuse it was 15 against 14 for however long.
Were you suggesting that Van der Fleer was somewhat at fault there? You said a couple of times he also came in high.
I was going to ask you, Shane, what you thought of Van der Fleer's role in it. I just couldn't quite figure out what he was trying to do.
I thought Van der Fleer got what he deserved, actually. That's
really?
I thought. I thought that was my kind of, you know, my initial instinct. And actually, even watching it back, I thought he had a go and then he had another go. And sometimes you do things and there's consequences to it. And I know there's at the moment, and it's correct that we think, you know, anybody gets a bang on the head. But, you know, this wasn't a one-way thing. The Toulouse player was in the ruck. He was stationary. He was being run into.
He was vulnerable, I thought.
He was vulnerable. Under those circumstances, it's the guy who's flying into the ruck has to be careful of where he's going. yes, he did brace for it, and maybe there was a bit movement of the head, but I kind of thought, listen, there's a shared responsibility here, and it certainly wasn't all one way. And if that was the flip reverse, I'd be saying, you know, that player got what he deserved. And you know, sometimes you have to modify your, you know, the way you enter rooks and your behavior on the rugby pitch. And you know what we don't have anymore is, you know, a self-policing, because it's very difficult to self-police. And you know, I'm not saying we go back to the days when if you went on the wrong side of the rook, you know, you got made mincemeat of. But there is something, there's a little bit of a, you know, there's a duty of care from the player running in, and maybe it puts a bit of a noodle in your head to go, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing that.
It's still a red, though, isn't it, though? It's still a red card, regardless of the fact that Van der Vleer may have brought it upon himself.
I kind of thought Van der Vleer could have got a yellow, too. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that could have happened. I think, and that might have been better, two yellows. But Van der Vleer was running in. He was running in fairly high as well.
Yep.
You know, the guy's bracing himself. You know, it could have easily been a yellow for Van der Vleer, and if it was, I would have thought fair enough.
I'll tell you where Leinster got very lucky, I thought, was the Porter one. Mm-hmm. I don't know, was that just missed because
the score happened,
so Toulouse scored anyway, and maybe you're less inclined to look at instance foul play. But it was a textbook tip in a illegal way, tip tackle. He didn't seem to be paying much regard to where the player landed. Now maybe they landed, we didn't get enough replays again because we didn't see it. So maybe they landed on their back. Only a yellow. If so, even that would have been quite lucky.
French media were particularly annoyed.
Yellow or red for Porter there.
The French media were particularly annoyed about that, and Mola as well. Less so, but the French media, there's a bit of a feeling among the French media that they get they don't get treated fairly here, and that the camera angles that aren't shown to the TMO that should be shown. And
that's a good one.
I know. But that is the narrative in the French media. There's a little bit of that going on. And
well, there was a try, the Six Nations, isn't that what they're thinking of? Was that against France? Our try that was or wasn't? Listen, we can come
James
back.
Lowe. James Lowe.
Yeah, James Lowe. Yeah. That's probably in their head.
Yeah,
say,
that is as well. Yeah. But yeah, I think I thought Andrew Porter was fortunate there. Shane, what did you think?
I couldn't see it properly. It's the issue. And I went back and I sort of went back to the replays, and there weren't a huge amount of replays.
No.
It seemed to move on very quickly. Mm. But what I did notice by replaying it so often was, you could see the Toulouse coach going bananas. He was going, why isn't this being reviewed? And I assume that's what he was talking about, because they had just scored a try, and it wasn't elation, it was agitation. And I'm certain that's what it was. Yeah. And again, that should have been reviewed. I got the feeling that maybe he landed on, you know, on the flat of his back, but it did look very aggressive. It did look tippy. So, you know, that could have been a different story. And, you know, Toulouse had just scored, and you know, Leinster get a man in the bin at that point, and that's potentially a significant swing.
Just going back to Leo Cullen, his reaction afterwards, he was asked about, you know, the Barassi injury and the fact that Ugo Mola changed the whole backline, DuPont to 10, and he was saying, well, if you don't do 6-2 split on your bench, so 6-4s, 2 backs, there's always a risk with that. He said, we debated in every team meeting, should we go 6-2? Mm-hmm. Obviously, this all started with Rassie Erasmus, South Africa. And he said, there's a risk with it. And if you get an injury early on to a backline player,
you've no options,
this is what happens.
Backline.
And there was a bit of them, and there's a huge part of me, I love to see a team punished for going 6-2.
Yes,
because
likewise.
If these bigger, particularly teams with a natural size advantage, get to roll off giant props and giant second rows in the 60th minute over and over and never get punished for it, the risk-reward never gets weighed up as much. And now, hopefully, in a big game like this, and I'd love to see it happen to South Africa as well, where, hang on, this 6-2 thing isn't a fait accompli, that there's risk-reward.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've always hated them. I think that there's almost something... I'd almost think that World Rugby Championship introduced a rule forbidding it, because in this day and age, to bring on six monster forwards for the last 20 minutes, it just... It doesn't sit right with me. I just think I don't know whether it's scientifically proven out, but whether or not more injuries follow, maybe they don't, but I agree with you totally in that I don't think it suits Toulouse either. I don't think it's what Toulouse are about, in just trying to beat you up with six forwards off the bench. And
it's the problem, isn't it, when a team wins a World Cup with a certain style, people copycat it happens every time, and maybe this cycle hasn't been great for rugby in that sense.
Exactly, and I very rarely recall Irish teams ever doing it. Munster do it once or twice. They did it a few times under Johan van Graan. They did it a couple of times in the South Africa tour. But by and large, I can't ever recall Ireland doing it. And I'm glad they never do it. And for that very reason, as you said, Simon, if you get an injury to one of your backs in the first 15 minutes, you basically cannot afford to make another replacement in your back line for the rest of the game.
Bert. But interestingly, Leinster are probably in the best position to do that type of split because Frawley covers so many players, positions, and actually the back three are so adaptable.
That was the odd thing as well about the Toulouse, the choice of their two backs on the 6-2 split. A winner come scrum half, who got the winning try for La Rochelle in the final last year. Do you remember? He's a winner come scrum half, Rettier. Or Grouse, a specialist scrum half. Very odd. Do they not have one other utility back in the whole of Toulouse?
That's the issue. That's the issue more than anything else. And that, you know, you make your decision, you know, you roll the dice, but then you try and mitigate the, you know, potential issues that are going to come about. And they didn't by picking those two guys. It was ludicrous. So they're, as I said at the start, they're in a position where they haven't got a player that can cover those. You need someone who can cover centres and potentially back three, you know, or 10 centres, and you know, then you can deal with the back three. Of course, you need a nine, but if you've got like a, you've got a winger, that means that you have to reshape your whole back line. And most importantly, again, sorry to reiterate, but there are two best players in their best position. One injury means you have to move those two. That's too big a risk, and it doesn't mitigate the potential advantage that you would get, you know, by that 6-2 split.
2 weeks ago, Toulouse had a cracking game against Lyon in the top 14. I watched from beginning to end. Lyon have the best away record in the top 14. They've got a whole 4 away wins, but they actually go away from home and they give it a go.
That's the record, is it? 4?
That's the highest this season. That's the best away record in the top 14. And they went to Toulouse last 2 Sundays ago, the peak game, the 8 o'clock Sunday night game, I think it was. And it was like 38-33 or something. Lyon actually outscored Toulouse by 4-3. And Toulouse had just come off their epic quarterfinal win over Sharks, and they put Dupont on the bench, they put Ramos on the bench, they might even put Entomac on the bench, they put a lot of their big guns on the bench, and they got injuries. Poor Ange Quapuoto, his shoulder went after a couple of minutes again, so Dupont came on after about 5 or 10 minutes, so did Ramos, and Dupont actually went into out half, and Toulouse do play Dupont a fair bit at out half, but Leinster, of course, watched that game, so they actually had prepared for this eventuality as well. They had all their bases covered, because a little bit also in that sense that Toulouse had shown their hand.
I think we snuffed Dupont quite well to get Ireland and Leinster.
Well, it's an amazing thing, Simon, that we know these Leinster and Irish players have not lost one match all season. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Like Grand Slam, unbeaten November, and now, you know, still on course for a double. Anton Dupont has started 22 or 23 matches this season. He's only on the losing side twice, both in the Aviva. Like a lot of Ramos has only had 3 defeats all the season. The other one was in Po. Flamand, all these players. The frontline Toulouse team were unbeaten and top of the top 14. Whenever they play, they generally win. And France have only had 1 defeat this season. So we might talk about that another time, but this obviously has implications for the World Cup, because I think France must be now a little bit spooked by Irish rugby. And even La Rochelle beating Leinster in the final wouldn't necessarily change that, because Toulouse are much more of a French-type side than La Rochelle are.
It's certainly no harm. It's certainly no harm, Jerry.
I don't know about spooked, but a doubt. I see the doubt.
Oh, definitely.
And listen, we know that this French team, these French players will be different in the World Cup because of just what will come behind them. And I think even the difference between, you know, the World Cup and France, what I played, and it's the atmosphere, the lead in, the positioning of the French crowd as a vital component, and the French population as a vital component in that success, has been building for a number of years, and they have a different sort of connection to this team than they did to that team. But still, even that said, you know, these performances and these victories are definitely doing Ireland no harm.
I definitely think we'd have them spooked if we were playing in the Aviva. You know, if the World Cup was in Ireland, I'd be feeling pretty confident if we ended. But I don't know if it's the same when as Shane's saying, when it's a French team in a World Cup.
I do think they will. It's not that we'll have them spooked, but they will think differently about how they'll play against us, and they will recognise that Ireland are capable of doing stuff that they maybe previously didn't think. And listen, why I'm thinking about that is the example of that is that very early break by Leinster, where we're they were deep in their 22, and it was two passes and got out, and you know, they made Gibson Parker then kicking the ball, and they probably went about 70 meters. That is not, I would say, traditional Irish play, you know, by any manner of means. So French players won't have thought that that was necessarily on. And those Toulouse players, even at this point, even the exposure they've had to Leinster over the years and Ireland over the years, I think they were a little bit surprised by that. Now, that means that they're more aware of it now. That means that they do have to defend in a slightly different way. And that may mean that that wide option is covered. But it also means that there's a little chink somewhere else, because that's in their head as well. And I think, you know, recognizing that an Irish team has multiple threats actually means there's opportunity for Ireland.
Can we talk about Jack Conan's performance, Shane? We had him on the podcast a few weeks ago after the Six Nations, and he revealed that he had this medical issue the previous season, which turned out to be a cyst on his pituitary gland, which has been dealt with since, but it affected him psychologically and physically, a lot of energy issues for quite a number of months last year. I think looking at him at the weekend, he looked certainly to be back to his best.
Yeah, fair to say he's got a handle on it. And by the way, that interview I thought was brilliant. We don't get enough from players, and you know, do these interviews after games. I know it's not like with like, and you get the standard answers, and that's, you know, maybe they have to do that during the Six Nations as well, because you know, there is this case of using your teams using your war words against you. But after a Six Nations where you could see there was a sort of comfort and there was an openness, and you know, Jack's very, very good interviewee as well. Yeah, he's very giving.
Very good.
So yeah. I thought it was really insightful. So I now, as a result, you kind of feel as if you know more about Jack, and I'm invested more in his.
Yeah, we were saying it earlier. Yeah,
you know, and I think that's very beneficial for players, and they should be kind of aware of that, because every time he gets the ball, there's a roar in the Aviva. I'm not the only one that's been affected by that sort of, you know, that openness that he has, and understanding his personality a bit more. And I love seeing players' personalities on the field, and you do it with him. He's like a super hard worker. You know, any of those concerns that, you know, those fatigue concerns that he's had over, and which sounded like a bit of a tough time for him, which I'm sure it was, both physically and mentally, they were sort of banished. And the fact that he's gone into eight and they've sort of orientated the back line. Listen, sorry, the back row. Like, who would in their right mind be going, oh, we're going to move Doris to six? Who does, you know, he's an outstanding player maybe in the Six Nations this year. He's been Ireland's most outstanding player for a couple of years, but they're doing it because the balance of the back row is such that, you know, when Jack Conan is playing at his best, and we saw on the Lions a couple of summers ago, that he's an absolutely key player and a you know, a massive performer for Leinster. That balance of that back row just looks so good at the moment. They're all great workers. They're all smart. Again, you know, ad nauseum I said it, they're very aware of the bigger picture. Footwork good, you know, and that of all the sort of rows in the Leinster team, I think is the one that their success is most built on, actually.
Yeah, I would agree. The main reason I thought Leinster were going to win, apart from home advantage, was the advantage they would have in the back row. I just thought they had a better back row, the way Conan's playing. The only shame is that Doris, by moving him to six, you just see less of his ball carrying, because six just don't get on the ball as much as eight. And you see it for that try by Jason Jenkins. It's Conan's carry, and then Doris comes in and makes a brilliant clear out, which basically opens the path to the line for McGrath to feed Jenkins. So, but that's typical of Doris. He's a very selfless team player. As the whole three of them are, their work rate is savage. We hardly saw Thibaut Flamand, one of the players of the tournament. Hardly saw him in the match. We got that try at the end. Oh, I forgot he was playing. Francois Crowe had a resurgence towards the end of Six Nations, and since then, hardly saw him. Jack Willis was probably about the best of the three of them, but they were completely eclipsed by the Irish back row, which is in sensational form at the moment. And it's great to see Jack playing as well as he did, and listen to that interview you guys did with them. It just shows you how often we don't really know. No players, almost no player is ever 100%, but you don't know what percentage they're really running at.
I haven't got a clue what's going on.
No, and we're judging them from the press box or from our armchairs or wherever, you know.
Yeah. And Jerry, I've felt that as well, because, you know, Simon, I think I gave you a shout afterwards. I sent you a message and said it actually really resonated with me, because and sometimes you do this as an analyst, having you forget what your experience was when you were a player. And it was so often, you know, I'd be carrying an injury and half the team would be carrying an injury and maybe sometimes quite a significant injury into games. And you can't, one, let anybody know about that. Mm. And two, you can't really speak about it afterwards because nobody cares. You know, nobody cares whether you're injured.
Yeah.
As impacting your performance. We are in, and they are in, a performance business. That's
even,
it.
Even your coach probably doesn't have much sympathy for you, Shane, does he?
Doesn't give a shite, Jerry. Doesn't give a shite. Now, he has enough sympathy to get you on the pitch, right? So he, because, and that is the kind of the deal that you make with each other. You're going, right, I'm carrying this, but you have to trust me that I'll deliver for you if you pick me, knowing that I am carrying an injury. And he's going, no problem. I'll pick you, knowing you have the injury, but you have to deliver for me. And that works out. That's a lot of the time it works out. But if it when it doesn't work out, you know, everybody feels a little bit sore about it. But rugby is such a physical game that, you know, I would say 90% of games, 75% of people have something that they're not feeling 100% with. It's just the way it works.
Mm. Owen, I don't want to say all of Conan's form is down to second captains. But if you also think Dan Sheehan did a live show with us and his form since has been good as
well.
Yeah,
it was pretty good beforehand, to be fair, with Dan Sheehan. I think he'd already started like a trick.
Just one final thing.
When
right?
he got that ball, didn't you? Everybody in the ground just know, oh, it's Dan Sheehan, he's going to score.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's so funny how he's analysed as well. It's analysed like you're super talented back. Obviously, he's going to finish from there. You know, it's still hard for me to adjust to that.
With the backs chasing him.
And one of the reasons you know that Leinster are going to make 15 against 14 immediately into 7 points from the penalty that goes to the corner and the score is because his darts are just wonderful.
Mm.
You just take that for granted. As well as everything else, his basics are fantastic.
Yeah. So three times in recent years, Leinster have hammered Toulouse, right?
Yeah.
And
five, yeah.
Yeah, and they look like a better coached team. And then Toulouse have won the double. They tend to beat La Rochelle in
the top
14.
I think they've won 8 of the last 9 or something against them. Yeah.
And yet when we face La Rochelle, I feel like, not that they're better coached, but it sort of styles make fights, essentially. Toulouse kind of suit Leinster and La Rochelle kind of suit Leinster.
It's like you think back to boxing, like Ali eventually got the better of Joe Frazier over 3 fights. Frazier would pummel Ken Norton, and Ken Norton always gave Ali problems. It's just the way styles make fights and the way they match up. And there's some
coaches make fights.
Yeah, exactly. And that, and you know, you're watching La Rochelle yesterday and you go, oh, yeah, okay. Leinster just putting Toulouse to the sword. But once again, La Rochelle loom as a bigger obstacle. Partly because of the O'Gara factor, they'd work out a plan, and partly because they're the one team, perhaps in this competition, who can stop Leinster physically on the contact zone, and they've got so many threats over the ball.
Poachers, he said it last year.
Yeah,
I picked loads of poachers for a reason. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know they're going to come with something similar again. Sorry, Shane, you to get in there.
Jerry, I don't know. I was listening to the commentary. By the way, I was so impressed by La Rochelle yesterday. I thought tactically they were set up brilliantly. But almost, I was a little bit frustrated by some of the commentary that was, I think, overstating the power. Listen, they have this intense power, you know, right across the whole team. But you get the feeling that this La Rochelle team can beat you in a number of ways. You know, they really can. They have a power game, and they have an offloading game. I thought they developed their. The way they attack their kicking game, so that cross kick was on the entire time. Their wingers, open wingers, are up very flat, and then they work back to get as an option to if the ball is moved wide, which is kind of I think a very O'Gara-ism in their play. Their work rate is phenomenal, and I noticed their work rate in defense. I watched the two games back to back, and the work rate by Toulouse versus the work rate La Rochelle. There was no comparison, actually, how quickly they were up and in the line. Their scramble defense is excellent. They score tries more easily when they get into your 22. But they have this phenomenal last ditch on the line defense that was sort of, I was trying to think who they reminded me of. And it was Wales in their pomp. When that Wales team under Gatland, that it was so difficult to get over the line against them. That last meter, that's what La Rochelle have. So, yes, they are power, but they are so much more than that. They are a very, very complete team. And what's more, I think they're favourites for this final.
Really? Even though it's in Dublin?
Yeah. I think it's about time, you know, we need to sort of respect this La Rochelle's side. And I know we all respect Ronan and what he's achieved there and through his career. But there's always kind of this thing of the last few years that, you know, Leinster are that much better. They have beaten Leinster the last two times they played against them in the semi-final and final of this competition and deserved both those victories. And they probably should have won the cup 2 years ago against Toulouse. But for that, I think it was that sending off, I thought tactically they had Toulouse done in that final in Twickenham.
Yeah, so, it's funny. Toulon came out of nowhere and won it three times in a row. And there's a hint of La Rochelle about that Toulon team in that it breaks the mold of the European Cup. A team springs out of nowhere. Normally you have to cut your teeth, have a few near misses, and then you come through. Toulon ripped up that script, and La Rochelle almost certainly did. Shane's right, if they'd won that final, they'd be now going for three in a row. Mm. And we'd be thinking of them in an even different light again. Also, the other thing, Shane, is they didn't have Tuira Kerr-Barlow in the final last year.
Yeah.
And Antoine Hastoy has come through as their out half, who's probably a better player than Ihiah West, even though West's goal-kicking was outstanding in the final last year,
yeah,
or 2 years ago in the semi-final. Rather. But he's a more dangerous player off go forward ball. Now, he has struggled a little bit when La Rochelle haven't been dominant up front, but when they get on any kind of momentum going, he's a brilliant player. He's a running threat himself, and they've got running threats throughout the back line. And Kerr-Barlow is just, you saw him yesterday, the way he spots a gap and scored his two tries. Yeah. He scored in every round of the knockout stages. And also, it feels like La Rochelle, and it's fair play to O'Gara, he's performed a little bit of a lobotomy on the top 14 and certainly on La Rochelle to make them dream of winning Europe, the Champions Cup. That was never part of their DNA until he came along. And now you look at the 42,000 cell, you look at those
scenes. Did you
see
him on BT afterwards?
Yeah, yeah.
They were saying, how does English rugby get this? You know, the crowds, the money, the culture. And he's like, it wasn't always like this.
No, exactly.
And I was watching my wife, who's from Cork as well. She's like, is he saying this is all down to him? And it's not that. He's talking about funding and all that sort of stuff. But it actually, I know it's a bit too Irish-centric, but a lot of it is actually down to Raj.
Yeah.
That sort of culture, believing in Europe.
Yeah.
It was obviously ready to go there.
Are they not getting better as the rounds progress? Like, in the pool stages, they struggled to beat Ulster. They had a couple of iffy performances. That was by some distance their best performance so far in this competition.
Shane, last one to you on that, Shane.
They're a hard track team as well. They are a better team at this time of the year than they are, you know, earlier on in sort of, you know, the sort of quagmire winter, type grounds. They allows them to lean into their offloading game, which is phenomenal, the best in Europe by a long way. They're also not risk averse, you know, so they're not wild in the way they pass, but they are often looking for an offload. I think that comes again from O'Gara from Canterbury, where there shouldn't be a fear in making a mistake. And you can see those players are very, very comfortable with an element of risk, and it pays off very often for them. But that was the other thing that came out of the me watching the game. How many times have we seen over the years and recent past, stadiums for European Cup semi-finals half full, with big teams in it? I'm talking Saracens were sort of one of the biggest teams, or in multiple winners, and you would do a semi-final and there would be a half a full or three quarter full stadium. I was buoyed by the fact it was Exeter, who I couldn't imagine having a huge amount of people traveling. Against La Rochelle, who are, La Rochelle isn't a massive place.
No, they said everybody in La Rochelle got the trade out.
I was saying, if you were a burglar in La Rochelle, you were having a field day yesterday, weren't you? There was nobody at home. Yeah, you could have sweeped out the whole place.
You hope 5,000-7,000 come to Dublin, don't you? And just there's a big chunk of yellow and blue in the stadium. It deserves it.
Yeah.
First time ever the same two teams have contested the final 2 years running. Amazing to think that.
No, it's good stuff for Leinster. It's not all rosy for Irish rugby at the moment, though, Jerry. The women's team, well beaten in the end by Scotland after a reasonably decent first half. Mm-hmm. Well beaten in the end. They finished bottom of the table, lost all their games, a minus 167 points difference. It's their worst ever season. Does this feel like rock bottom?
Yeah, it does a bit, doesn't it? You kind of listen to Senny Naupu and the girls talking after the game.
Yeah,
and
the emotion there was so plain to see. Yeah. People who were so invested in the game and the women's game, particularly in this country.
And Senny held her hands up and said that this does date back to the losing the World Cup qualifier in Italy to Scotland that cost Ireland a place in the World Cup. I was always a bit perplexed by the optimism, understandably, I suppose, to some degree coming around, out of the camp, but also around Ireland's chances in the Six Nations, given that Scotland, Wales, Italy, particularly, never mind England and France, were just in a different stratosphere anyway.
Forget about competing with them for a long time. Yeah.
But the other three had all been playing in a World Cup when Ireland had, Ireland just had a couple of games in Japan, and were coming in with a relatively new team, and they all have more settled teams, and Ireland were away to all three of them. And then you saw from the first game after the defeat by Wales, when they probably picked the wrong scrum, but even allowing for that, you kind of went, well, it's hard to see this Irish team picking up a point from here on in. Mm. And by the time they got to England, it was a damage limitation exercise, and it was a relative success to be the only team to keep England under 50 until that fantastic finale between England and France on Saturday. Mm. So yeah, but the problem is they go into this tier three of the World 15.
Yes, yeah. So can we explain that for people? So the
World
Rugby next
introducing
world
a three tiered world competition to make for more international rugby, and it's it's a little bit more, I don't know, democratic, is that the word? Democratic for, in that a lot of outside other tier two nations are coming into this competition, and so but Ireland are going into tier three, which means they're going to play the likes of Papua New Guinea and Kazakhstan and so forth.
And this is obviously separate to the Six Nations. They're in the Six Nations this year, but their games in the meantime are against these lower
teams.
Yeah.
So you'd wonder how much that's going to raise their standards. Hopefully they get a few wins under the belt, but meantime Scotland, Wales and Italy are playing against tougher quality opposition. Mm. So when it comes to the Six Nations next year, the inherent problems within the Irish system about a lack of a player pathway, about a lack of the provinces, even this new competition, the combined provinces in the Celtic Cup, it's given all the Welsh and Scottish players are playing in the Premiership, it didn't prove worthwhile this season. Wonder whether you'll even keep it going, and it's hard to see how Irish rugby can fast track this, you know, to bridge this gap, how they can do it quickly.
Yeah, what it reminds me a bit of, and I was listening to this recently, about the Premier League when it started and some of the founding teams who voted for it. Notts County were one of them there now, I think, non-league. And it's just at this point where money, and like there's almost 60,000 at Twickenham, you know, watching the England team, as money and TV rights and standards and the proper Premier 15s league in England, all that start to happen, and that's pulling in the Welsh and Scottish too, a lot of Welsh players in that league, that are we just missing it at the point that the game takes off and it's going to take longer than it even should do to catch up? If we're 2 years now in this WXV playing, apparently the likes of Kazakhstan and Jamaica, and I'm sure we'll win those games. So we're stuck in it for 2 years. As you say, Wales and Scotland and the rest start to play these other games. And then the BBC were making a good point afterwards. They were saying that there's sort of like a golden period here where people are accepting big blowouts, and this happens in men's games as well, but there isn't a whole competition where you go, England will win that game, France will win that game over and over every week, and then they'll play in the end, England will probably win, but at least we've got one game in the competition where the result is in doubt. There's a period here where people are going, yeah, that's acceptable, that won't last forever. If Ireland and whoever lose by 50 points every week, that's not going to work. So maybe the WXV becomes a more important competition than the Six Nations. Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean.
Because if you pull in USA and Canada, who are very good, in New Zealand, that's kind of more interesting and more relevant to the women's game. Just because the Six Nations works for the men's doesn't mean it's an amazing competition for the women's. But I'm worried about it. My main point is I'm worried about Ireland having obviously left the game, like not invested in it in any shape or form, time-wise, money-wise, for so long. And we're just at the point, the wrong point to not be doing that.
Picked a really bad time to be bottom of the Six Nations pile. It looks that way. Without being too grim about it, that's the way it looks. Like I said, how do you bridge this gap? Because the structures aren't in place. And you'd almost think, should Irish women's rugby go the way of Irish men's rugby in the mid-90s when the game first went professional, and just a flight of wild geese proportions over to the Premiership in England, as happened then with London Irish and so forth. I'm not saying that's the answer. I don't know what the answer is, the God's honest truth. I do think that there's been a decade now of investment of Olympic Committee money into the Sevens game, which is great. It's great that the girls and the boys want to try and get to the Olympics, and they perform brilliantly in World Sevens circuits, and good luck to them. And I hope the women's team make the Olympics. But my point being that even if they make the Olympics, and even if they make the semi-finals, and even if they win a bronze medal, which would be an incredible achievement, or something better, there'll be nothing like the viewership figures that there are for Six Nations games on terrestrial television. Be BBC, where hundreds of thousands, over a million people maybe watch a game, and see Ireland lose 48-0 to England, or wherever it was last year, and the same Virgin Media and RT. I'm sure the audience figures weren't great, but it's still terrestrial television. So the 15-a-side game is the game.
They would be great, by the way. They would be great if the team was winning.
Exactly.
You know, if we were back to 10 years ago and competing for a Grand Slam.
My
laboured
point being that this is the shop window for women's rugby.
Yeah.
the Six Nations. Not with the best will in the world, a sevens game, which is no longer even on Sky Sports. You have to get access via streaming service. And let's say the Irish women's team win a bronze medal in the Olympics game. Be brilliant. How many young girls are going to be inspired to take up the game by maybe catching that summer, as opposed to watching Ireland perform pretty well in a Six Nations game? Also, is sevens rugby even a thing in Ireland? Like, great if you want to play sevens rugby. Well, where do you go and play sevens rugby? Like, this is a 15s a side game. We've never had a great tradition of sevens rugby from the club system up.
I have to say, I do really enjoy watching.
I love watching
sevens at the last Olympics, and I do think if Ireland were to somehow get a medal, that would probably inspire quite a lot of people. But the issue, and Joe put it to the panel on Virgin, is it feasible to try to plough resources into both at the moment? And no, it certainly doesn't seem to be, whatever way it's being divided up, certainly the 15 seem to be suffering quite badly.
And some fantastic players in sevens, like Stacey Flood's a brilliant distributor. She'd be in a good out half or 12 in any international team. You've got great finishers and like Amy Lee and Bevan Parsons and so forth. And
they don't, like, the 15s team don't have a weapon at the moment.
No,
just
feels exactly.
Even just pace on the wings. Can we start with something?
That was the only difference really in the defeat against Italy. Italy, two very good wingers and a very good 12, and that was the difference, really, the truth be told. And I don't know that it's, we cannot say that the investment in sevens rugby has benefited the women's 15 side. And I totally get Fiona Coughlin's point that you can't mix and match. You can't be bringing them in on non-sevens weekends and bring them in and play them in a Six Nations game, and then they're unavailable the following week. That just doesn't build cohesion. It probably builds a split in the camp. Mm-hmm. I used to think that might have been the solution, but no, I bow to Fiona's greater knowledge in this and say, I think she's right. But I'm just not sure that this investment and women's sevens rugby is benefiting the 15 side at all.
All right. Jerry, Shane, brilliant stuff. Thanks a mil.
Cheers, lads.
Cheers.
Most sports nutrition experts would argue that the fueling begins, in fact, the most important element of it is the day before, and particularly the night before. So if you could take us through your routine.
To win the Premier League is a war on nutrition.
Okay, well, the night before I had sort of a chicken salad.
Yeah, perfect.
Lovely, perfect.
I put a bit of pesto on. I put half a jar.
That's too much pesto, but it's not the end of the world.
And I actually bulked up that chicken salad with a little bit of Israeli couscous.
We're still okay. We're still in the realms of pretty good nutrition, I would say, the day before a race.
I had two beers.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
Okay, not ideal, but not the end of the world.
I had a small Pringles. You know the Ritter Sport bars? I hadn't seen cornflake one before.
Nobody had any soup to start with. Nobody had any puddings to finish with. They had fish and chips.
Okay, I had a whiskey and coke.
No, come on, not great. Not after the beers.
Well, it was a whiskey and coke zero. You know, you probably know what direction I was thinking. We'll have another whiskey.
You could have one drink, no more, and then you're back to the hotel and you're off to bed.
Then I was thinking, what will I have? You know what? I'll have a cup of tea.
Okay, perfect.
I had tea, then I had a few digestive biscuits.
Well, there was a suggestion that there was sort of an all-you-can-eat sort of a thing going on.
I wasn't counting them. They were like buns to an elephant. I was just hoovering them up. And then just before I went to bed, I had a slice of toast with Nutella.
No!
It was whole grain bread.
A reminder before we go today, your football pod with Ken will be available tomorrow for World Service members. Paul Flynn and Michael Murphy on the show on Wednesday, where no doubt we'll be talking about Kildare manager Glenn Ryan's verbal broadside about the Dubs having an unfair advantage at Croke Park.
Anti-Dublin bias is the biggest load of bollocks.
Really, Oisin?
Total and utter dung.
I just thought I used to play that, to be fair.
It's that bastard.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Ud.
Thanks, Murph.
Thanks for listening. We'd love you to sign up to hear all episodes ad-free on secondcaptains.com. The Second Captains podcast is part of the
Acast.
Creator.
Simon.
Network.
Acast.
Creator.
Network. Acast. No, wait. Network. Acast.
Creator.
Network.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off. They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuaders of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.